Now, tonight, our main speaker is Joe H.
My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. I want to thank Chuck for asking me to come tonight. It is always an honor to be asked to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only problem with that is my ego gets in the way and I start to think I have something to do with that. So I need to remember in a moment of silence before I do this each time who gets that honor. The first time I ever did this, I was about 6.5, 7 months sober. And I was living in Denver, Colorado, where I got sober. And I had just spent about 6 or 7 hours reading my first inventory to my sponsor. And he said that he had to go across town, and he was the state delegate at the time, and I was used to following him around, listening to him speak. And we drove across Denver to the other side of town, and we walked into a church. Now, it wasn't quite this big, but in Denver, it was a pretty big meeting. There was about 200 or 300 people. And as we were walking in, he said, "I forgot to tell you something." You always have to be careful when your sponsor says, "I forgot to tell you something." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "You're speaking first." And I thought to myself, my God, after looking at all this garbage all day, and I asked him a question that I had learned to ask him several months earlier. I said, "How do you do that?" And he said, "You go in the bathroom, you say a prayer, and you get up and you see what happens." And I've been doing that ever since. I can't do this. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous terribly withdrawn, terribly shut off. It was hard for me to speak to one person, let alone a group, where I got sober in treatment. And by the grace of God, I've been taken to a place where today I have something to say. Now, I don't know how that happens. I was taught from the very beginning to look for the miracles in my life and in Alcoholics Anonymous in simple, practical, understandable terms. Because I was a guy, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had this idea about burning bushes and the clouds were going to open up when I took the third step, and my sponsor always encouraged me to look for practical applications of the power of God in my life. And I'm here to tell you, to be invited home for Christmas 9 years in a row is a miracle. To be asked back to groups in Alcoholics Anonymous more than once is a miracle. To have friends here with me tonight, to feel the way I feel most of the time, to be living the way I'm living. On my own, the very best that I can do is drink alcohol and be stuck to a bar stool. And I might always should remember that. I used to have a flowery story filled with drama and excitement and funny stories. And I had this idea that my alcoholism was about everywhere my alcoholism took me. And I used to share that with you to convince you and myself that I'm an alcoholic. And I got involved in a group of people in Denver, Colorado that told me that most of the drama of my drinking has nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic, and my story changed. Because I used to talk about going to 10 treatment centers. I used to talk about alcohol putting me in the Michigan State Penitentiary when I was 19 years old. And people started to talk to me about what our preamble says, where it says we should share our experience, strength, and hope with each other that we may solve our common problem. And they said, "You know, Joe, there's some of us in these rooms that have never been to treatment and we're just as much alcoholic as you are. Maybe that's not why you're an alcoholic." I also worked in the treatment field drunk, and I worked in the treatment field sober, and I'm here to tell you, a lot of dumb, hard drinkers go to treatment that are not like me. And I stopped basing my alcoholism on where it took me. And they started to talk to me about a common problem of alcoholism. And all of a sudden, something started to happen within me where I can nowadays sit in my living room with a 70-year-old woman from another nationality, from a different background, and we can talk about a common problem. And she's never been to treatment. And she never went to the penitentiary. She barely ever left home, and we talk about a common problem. When I get a chance to do that, when I get a chance to share with one of you, when I get a chance to go through the steps myself, for me, with an alcoholic that I trust, and we start to talk about alcoholism, I see a very interesting part of my alcoholism before I ever took a drink. I had this idea from working in treatment that alcoholism began with my first drink and ended with my last drink. Because when I worked in treatment, they used to have this thing called a Jelinek curve. And it starts with the first drink and it slowly works its way down to this terrible bottom. And then you get sober and there's this nice little progression to eternal bliss. And what I found out about that, neither my drinking nor my sobriety has been like that. And what I found out about that was there is a part of my disease, the part of my disease that brings me here tonight, that keeps me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it is nowhere else that I have found a treatment for that part of my disease, and I believe that part of my disease to be the root. The symptoms are simple. And I could tell you about 17 years of drinking alcohol in a certain way that has nothing to do with drinking alcohol for 17 years. It has to do with drinking alcohol a certain way. And it has to do with when I start drinking alcohol, I crave more alcohol, no matter what's going on in my head. And when I stop drinking alcohol, something seems to happen where I can't stay stopped. But when I look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a book that I am dedicated to because it has absolutely saved my life, and it certainly has nothing to do with virtue, I am not interested in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a nice guy, or it's something nice to do like Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts were. I didn't make it in those organizations, and I haven't made it in AA based on any virtue either. But I look in that big book and I see a description of alcoholism that's beyond those two physical and mental symptoms, where it describes a spiritual malady within the alcoholic after he stops drinking and before he ever takes a drink. And every one of those descriptions fit me at three different times in my life. I read the doctor's opinion and he says that I am restless, irritable, and discontented. Now, I don't know about you, but I was well into that before I ever took a drink. I'm the little kid that used to sit in the backyard and wait for a spaceship to land and a little green man get out and tell me I wasn't really born here on this planet, that I was brought here as a teeny baby and that this is just a test. And that spaceship didn't land. And I continued to feel different and separate and apart. And when I read the doctor's opinion the very first time, and he says that a part of our disease separates us and differentiates us as a distinct entity, I remembered sitting in the backyard feeling like an alien from another planet. And that's what he was saying. When I look in the chapter of the agnostic at a paragraph that they told me describes the unmanageability of my life and the spiritual malady and the condition of untreated alcoholism, and I read that paragraph and it talks about having trouble with personal relationships and not being able to control my emotions and being prey to misery and depression, and having that saddest thing for an alcoholic, that feeling of uselessness, being full of fear, being unhappy. I read that paragraph, and I said to myself, you know, I was well into that before I ever took a drink, and I put some alcohol on that, and it went away for a little while. And I was into that when the alcohol wasn't working, or when I would wake up in the morning during those 17 years of drinking, and I'm here to tell you, I was well into that 5.5 months sitting around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I was in AA because I was going to meetings, dying of untreated alcoholism, and I didn't know it. And it's that part of my disease that brings me here tonight. You see, because I haven't craved any alcohol for a long time now because I haven't put any in my system. And I have not been obsessed about alcohol for a long time because I have done what's necessary to recover from alcoholism. But on a regular basis, I suffer from the root of my disease that causes trouble and confusion and disharmony and restlessness and irritability and discontentment in my life. And the root of my disease is selfishness and self-centeredness. And I know that if that part of my disease is not treated on a regular basis, the idea is going to come to my mind one day that there's some stuff out there for me that's going to make it feel better. I heard George Carlin a few months ago, and he says, not only do we live in a society where we want to shield each other from death, and we change words that used to kind of make people uncomfortable, like shell shock from World War I, now after several wars we call it post-traumatic syndrome, because it sounds nicer. And I thought to myself, my God, you know, we do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do that. Rather than say that so-and-so drank, which is probably the most natural thing for an alcoholic to do, we certainly wouldn't want to scare the newcomers. We use cute little terms like, he slipped. Because it sounds nicer. Rather than admit to you today that I have a spiritual malady that no human power can relieve, I'd rather say that it's now the 90s and I suffer from low self-esteem coupled with obsessive compulsive behavior. I'm here to tell you, folks, I got a lot more than low self-esteem. I have written inventory after inventory after inventory in this program, and it has shown me two things, amongst a lot of other stuff. It has shown me that I have probably had more esteem for myself than anyone in this world will ever have for me. And drank. And I have probably had less esteem for myself than anyone in the world will ever have for me sober and didn't drink. And my alcoholism is not just obsessive compulsive behavior, because you see, the other interesting thing that he said is that we not only live in a society where we want to shield each other from death, we live in a society that believes if you change the name of the condition, you can change the condition. And I thought, my God, we're doing that in Alcoholics Anonymous too. There's a message in AA nowadays that I think kills drunks. And I think that message to a guy like me, when I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous the way I was when I got here, to tell a guy like me, just don't drink no matter what, is a very dangerous thing, because I will start to believe that I can do that. But the truth of my life is I drink no matter what. I need a little bit more than that. I've had people in my life that have told me that I love more than anyone I'll probably ever love. They used to tell me, Joe, just don't do that anymore. And I would say to them, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. And every time I said I wasn't going to do it anymore, I did it some more. I have time after time after time after time that I can share with you where I drink no matter what. We make it sound like alcoholism is something you can make up your mind about now that we're in the 90s. My sponsor told me when I said I'm terribly afraid of my own mind, he said, Joe, you have good reason to be. I also remember another day when I went to my sponsor and I said, Don, I feel terribly inferior and insecure. And I had just spent 12 years in therapy and had become a therapist and had been to all these treatment centers to find out the answer to some of those questions. And he looked at me and he said, Joe, do you know why you feel inferior and insecure? And I said, no, why? He said, because you're inferior and insecure. And I'm expecting some big, heavy Freudian answer that's not only going to solve everything but make me feel better. And it didn't make me feel better. I saw a movie not too long ago called Old Gringo with Jane Fonda and Gregory Peck. And there was this scene where this Mexican was dying in bed. I don't know why I thought of this tonight, but he's dying in bed of a gunshot wound, and he wakes up in the middle of the night crying out in pain, and Gregory Peck goes over to his bed, and the Mexican guy looks up to him in pain. And he says to Gregory Peck, am I going to die? And Gregory Peck says, yes. And he shakes, and he trembles, and he dies. And Jane Fonda has this look on her face like, that was crazy what you just said to that guy. And she said, why did you tell him that? And he says, you know, everybody needs the truth at least once before they die. She said, he didn't need the truth, he needed relief. And Gregory Peck says, why? Very few of us get anything but that before we die. And I thought to myself, I'm so grateful when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that they didn't just keep patting me on the back and telling me everything was just fine, because when they did that, everything wasn't fine. I love hugs. I love the fellowship. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I am most grateful to the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that were willing to risk my sensitive alcoholic feelings and hold up the mirror of truth based on their experience and say some things that didn't feel real good. because I started to get free. I started to get some answers to what's wrong with me. There's two stories that I kind of like that will tell you more about how I drink and more about how I think than if I was to spend a whole long time on my 17 years of drinking. And the first one is also a riddle for you new people. And it's about how I drink alcohol. And it's about these two twin brothers growing up across the street from a house of ill repute, and they're watching this house with great interest. And they're identical twins in every way except one. And the riddle is, which one's the alcoholic? And they're watching this house with great interest, and one year one brother talks the other brother in to going up to one of these men as they come out of this house and ask him what's going on in there. And he does that. And this one brother says to this man that came out of the house, what's going on in there? My brother and I are really wondering. And the old guy with a big smile on his face says, well, I'm not going to tell you, but I'll give you a hint. It makes you feel really good, and you have to pay for it. And now the other brother thinks about this for a couple more years. The other brother isn't really interested. And one day the one brother talks the other brother into getting 50 cents, and they're going to go over to this house and buy 50 cents worth of whatever they're selling over there. So they go over to this house, and they knock on the door, and this old lady answers, and she says, what do you want? They're about 9 years old. And the one brother says, we don't know what you're selling here, but we hear it makes you feel really good, and we want to buy 50 cents worth. And she grabs them by the collars, and she bangs their heads together for about 10 minutes and throws them out on the sidewalk. And as they're walking away, one brother looks at the other brother, and he says, I sure am glad we didn't buy $5 worth. And the other brother kept going back for more. Which one's the alcoholic? The other story I heard not too long ago, and it's exactly how I think. It's how I spent and consumed year after year after year of how I think until I started to get free in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's about this guy, God forbid, he's been sober forever, and he's on his deathbed. And his wife is there. She's right there beside him. And he looks up at his wife and he says, honey, after all these years, I've realized something. And she says, what's that? He says, well, you know, you were there when I got shot. And you stood by me. And you were right there. And you were there when I lost all our money in business. You were right there and you stood by me. And you were there when I had my first stroke. You were right there and you stood by me. And you've always been right there. And you've always stood by me. And after all these years, I've realized one thing. And she says, what's that? And he says, you are a frigging jinx. And I heard that. I heard that. I have this experience in my life where everything that's going on inside of me is because of anything going on outside of me. I hate to use the word, but if I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous like I was when I came in several years ago, I would probably now have one of these bumper stickers on my car. But I no longer believe it. My big book says that our troubles are our own making. I am no longer a victim of shit happening to me. But I had to want to get free of that. Because I would love to continue to blame you and her and them for the unmanageability of my life and why I feel the way I do. And I got free in the fourth column of the resentment inventory in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on one idea. My troubles are basically of my own making. Thank God. Because if they're of your making or her making or mommy and daddy's making, I'm screwed because they're going to have to change for me to get well. And some of them are dead. And some of them aren't going to change. My dad died when I was 21 years old, and I've been waiting for him to change for the last 9 years. He ain't gonna. My oldest resentment that I can trace back through all the therapy I've had and all the treatment centers and all my experience in AA, inventory after inventory, my earliest resentment was toward a man who was 57 years old when I was born. Can you imagine? 10 years old, he's 67. He doesn't play baseball with me. He doesn't take me to the games. He doesn't do this. All that made my inventory. And I started to see through a magical process of inventory where my selfishness, my dishonesty, my self-seeking, and my fear set up the whole deal. And I got free. And I went to his grave and made amends and did what I was told to do by my sponsor. Don't ever let anybody tell you you can't make amends to someone who's dead. One of the most powerful amends I've ever had was at my father's grave, and I got free. And today, what used to cause me great pain now gives me great hope. No one ever gets that. I would love to be doing what my dad was doing when he was 57 years old. I have tremendous respect for the man. My feelings toward him changed. And all I ever used to do was get temporary relief. Put his face on someone in therapy and bang him with a pillow. And I'd feel a little better. And then let me be reminded of him or see him or have to go to his grave. And there's that same old stuff. And you know what? I don't have any of that anymore. Through the process in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember leaving my last treatment center, September 1982, and I had some ideas about Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's real simple for me to share with you that one of the biggest symptoms of my disease that takes me back to the first drink over and over and over and over again is the ability to believe a lie. And I walk into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I think that's going to go away. But I'm here to tell you, I have believed some lies, either made up in my head or perpetuated in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I had to learn grave lessons through. And some of those lies when I left treatment were this: everyone in AA is either going to be an alcoholic or at least an addict. And everything I hear in AA is going to be AA. And everyone in AA is going to be there for the same reason I am. And I got out of my last treatment center and I started going to 90 meetings in 90 days. And I had a sponsor and I was reading the book and I was starting to work the steps. And in those 90 days, I found out that not everybody was in AA for the same reason I was. There were people here for jobs, and bosses, and wives, and courts, get laid, go to dances, have fun. And I had to start to decide, why am I here in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm glad there were some people in my life that were encouraging me to decide about my place in Alcoholics Anonymous and why in the world am I here. I didn't even know what was wrong with me. I started to find out that not everything I hear in AA is AA. And I started to find out not everybody in AA is like me. There are people in AA that can just not drink no matter what. There are people in AA that find everything they've ever wanted in the fellowship by itself. And I started hanging out in the fellowship, and I got real involved. And at 5.5 months dry, I reached a place, and this is pretty strong for me to say, and I'm only going to say this because I know that it never has to happen again, but I would rather drink again than ever be like the way I was 5.5 months further away from my last drink than I'd ever been. And I started to see that my alcoholism didn't end with my last drink. The further away I got from the solution that used to treat the spiritual malady that I suffer from, the worse it got. And I don't mean it by out here. I had a new place to live. I had a new girlfriend. I had a little bank account. I had a little job. I had a little car. I loved the people I was meeting in AA. I loved going to the meetings. And one day I woke up and I was given the grace to see the nature of my condition further away from my last drink than I'd ever been in 17 years. I was restless. I was irritable. I was discontented. I was getting ready to drink. I met a guy a couple months ago who told my story after a meeting, and he was new. And he came up to me and he said, "Yesterday I was at a meeting and I was scared enough to tell somebody that I really respect that it was on my back." Some of you haven't been here that long, and some of you still remember when it being on your back was a reality. That old familiar it. That old familiar it that's on your back just before you drink again. And he said he had the guts to go up to one of these men and say that, "It's on me, and I'm getting ready to drink." And you know what that guy said to him? "Ah, just keep coming back." Or the worst one of all, when you're in that state, the one that I absolutely used to hate to hear: "This too shall pass." And you want to take him and you want to strangle him and you want to say, "You know, I seem to drink just before it passes." And then there's this one that we throw around in AA. I'm as guilty as anybody. We throw it around like the newcomer is supposed to understand that they can do it or how they're supposed to do it. Just turn it over. I thought maybe when I celebrated my second birthday, they were going to show me some secret button that you press to just turn it over. But no one ever shared anything with me. And I'm glad when I became convinced of a few pertinent ideas by going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor and preparing to take the third step and doing that and getting up off my knees after saying that silly prayer. And I asked him the magical question in Alcoholics Anonymous, if that was just a decision, then how do you turn it over? He didn't just throw some cliche at me. He said, I'm going to show you precise, exact directions stating exactly how we turn it over in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Several months before that, I was in a meeting in North Denver, Colorado, where there was a group of men that were willing to risk my sensitive alcoholic feelings and tell me the truth, and I was doing the old AA shuffle. Now, I don't know if some of you know the AA shuffle, but I not only know the AA shuffle, I was doing it. And the AA shuffle goes like this. I turned it over, and I took it back. And I turned it over, and I took it back. And this old son of a gun looked at me, and he said, son, why don't you shut up and sit down? And you know what? I had drank enough alcohol to shut up and sit down. And he said, you know, if you're still doing that, you haven't turned it over. And I learned to ask the second greatest question I ever learned to ask in Alcoholics Anonymous. What do you mean? And I'll share with some of you new people. When you start to hear some of these people throw these cliches around like you're supposed to understand them, go up to them after a meeting and say, what do you mean? And I'm here to tell you. You will find out something very interesting in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to tell you what you'll find out, but it's very interesting. And I asked this man, what do you mean? He said, well, son, there's a difference between making a decision and the commitment of action that follows. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it's like telling someone to go sit in the corner and pray for ham and eggs and then just sit there. They will starve to death. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, son, there's a difference between the decision at the third step and the commitment of action that follows. If you tell someone to go sit in the corner and pray for ham and eggs and they decide to do that, and they do that, and they make one hell of a commitment, and you show them how to put one foot in front of the other, and they make one hell of a commitment, they'll probably eat ham and eggs. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it's like a chicken and a pig walking down the road. And they come to a sign on this church that says, help feed the poor. And the chicken's all pumped up with virtue, like some people in Alcoholics Anonymous, they like to do nice things for people. And the chicken says to the pig, we ought to do something about that hunger problem. And the pig says, well, what could we do? And the chicken says, well, we could feed him ham and eggs. And the pig had a little more sense than I did when I took the third step, because he said, for you, that's just a simple decision to lay some eggs. But for me, that's one hell of a commitment, because we're talking about my life. And I started to learn the difference between making a decision and making one hell of a commitment to take some action. I think that I have come to believe in the power of God the same way I came to believe in the power of alcohol. And I'm here to tell you, alcohol had power in my life. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. You take the promises on page 83 and you say before each one of those promises, when alcohol was working in my life, and then read one of those promises, alcohol did every one of them. When alcohol was working in my life, fear of people and of economic insecurity would leave me. I'd fight the biggest guy in the bar and buy everyone a drink. That feeling of uselessness would disappear. My whole attitude and outlook on life would change. Etc., etc., etc. So how did I come to believe in alcohol? Because you know, if somebody would have come to me the day before I took my first drink, the day before I took my first drink, and said to me everything that alcohol was going to do for me, and everything alcohol was going to do to me for the next 17 years, I would have said, man, you're crazy. I have no faith in what you're saying. But how did I come to a place where I absolutely relied on alcohol? Well, I made a decision. I took some action. I got some results. And then I had faith. And they said, Joe, the same process takes place in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You make a decision at the third step based on whatever little belief you have. You take some action in 4 through 9, and you get some results outlined in our promises, and then you have faith. And I have come to believe in the power of God the same way I came to rely on alcohol. And it hasn't been complicated. It has been terribly simple, because I am a terribly complicated guy. So I went to 10 treatment centers. The only thing you can do when you've been to 10 treatment centers is become a therapist in one. So that's what I did. Drinking with the director of the program that I worked for. Now I get sober and I'm asked to work in treatment again, so I have to work in treatment to make amends for what I did drinking in treatment. Until I woke up one day 4.5 years sober, and I'd been working in treatment a few years, and I was given a clear-cut message, you don't have to work in treatment anymore. Haven't worked for anybody since. I don't know how that happens. All I know is that I reached a place at 5.5 months sober where I saw the nature of my condition, but I was further away from alcohol than I'd ever been in 17 years, and I went out to a man's house, and he said he only knew one way to sponsor somebody, and that was to start on the title page of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and go through it together. And I have never, ever felt the way I did the day I went to his house. That doesn't mean I felt great every day, but I have never been that desperate. I have never been that hopeless. I have never been that miserable since that day. The first day he talked to me, and he shared with me the circle and the triangle, and talked to me about a 3-part program, I saw I was only in one, expecting the results of the other two. I was hanging out in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, thinking I was in AA because I was going to meetings, and I wasn't in recovery, and I wasn't involved in service. He said there was a part of the program for each part of my disease, and that if I bring my body to the fellowship, which I was doing, and I bring my mind to the recovery process, and take my awakened spirit back out into the world and back into the program, that I could one day become whole, a whole human being. And I was excited about AA, more excited than I had been in 5.5 months, and I started to get involved in that process. And I'm here to tell you, when I became convinced that I am an alcoholic, and that when I start to drink, I can't control how much more I'm going to drink, and that when I stop drinking, I can't keep myself stopped, and that there is within me a spiritual malady that I can't make go away, and became willing to believe that God could and would if he were sought, and started to take that action, everything started to change. And I found out that the way that this guy, the way that this drunk turns his will and his life over the care of God, is by taking direct actions against his will, contrary to his life. And I'm here to tell you, to write inventory the way it is in that book, to take that to someone and read the whole deal, to ask something other than yourself to remove that stuff. I love when I hear somebody working 6 and 7. People work 6 and 7 that don't want to do 8 and 9, and they spend months on it. I think 6 and 7 is maybe where God's supposed to do something. That'll be the day I ever remove any of my character defects or shortcomings. You know how you've worked 6 and 7? You're making a list of people you've harmed, and you become willing to make amends to them. And you know how you're willing to make amends? When you hear this. What does my sponsor call that? The sound of amends. When you're at their door, willing to say what you've done to them and ask them what you can do to make it right. And my life started to change. And everything started to take on new meaning. My life just took off by taking actions against my will, contrary to my life. So I continue to do that on a regular basis. I didn't come to AA to debate. I came to AA to find some people that have what I want and do what they do. And the people that still in Alcoholics Anonymous that have what I want do the steps on a regular basis. I don't care if you go through them once and live in 10, 11, and 12. I've gone through the first 9 steps every year for the last 8 years. And every time I do that, my life changes. One year I'm making amends in California because I'd been in a relationship out here. I end up with a great place to live on the beach in Santa Monica, and I've been there ever since. And I didn't plan to move to Santa Monica, to really begin to align my will with the will of God, to really start to learn from people that have been My spiritual advisor has 31 years, and she's been doing this work in the Big Book for 31 years, and the lady is the most amazing 68-year-old woman I've ever met. She's an artist. She loves rock and roll. She loves music, the opera, her family. She runs the Denver Central office. And she's willing to submit herself to this process on a regular basis for 31 years. I admire that. I don't want to be around here 15, 20, 30 years telling you about what it was like to write inventory in 1983. I want to tell you about this week's selfishness, this week's dishonesty, this week's amends, and the freedom that I'm getting by admitting that stuff to myself and to another person, asking for that stuff to be removed and being moved to another place, making amends when I cause harm, saying a little bit more than I'm sorry. First thing they ever told me about amends, except when to do so would injure them or others, Joe, you're not others. I have made amends for armed robberies, for sticking guns in people's faces, for living a way that I absolutely don't feel even connected with that person anymore, because I was willing to get free of that person. There's a story I heard that sums up my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love this story. And it's about a guy swimming across a lake, and he gets about halfway across that lake, and it's getting really hard to swim. And sometimes he can't even yell for help anymore. The water is so high he can't even yell for help anymore because he's swimming across that lake with a 20-pound anvil. And he looks over on one side of the lake and there's some men with briefcases and they're going three-piece suits and they're going somewhere. And he yells to one of them and they hear him and they say, son, we're going to go up to the state capitol and make it against the law for you to do that anymore, and you won't be able to do that anymore. And my anvil got heavier. And I looked on another side of the lake, and there were men with goatees and sofas and chairs, and they were sitting up, and I yelled to one of them, and he heard me, and he said, son, we're going to figure out what's wrong with you. It'll be a long, tedious, painful process, but you'll be able to cope with it. And my anvil got even heavier. And I looked over on another side of the lake, and there were some people praying and getting up and throwing their crutches, and I yelled to one of them, and he said, our next prayer is for you. And my anvil got heavier, because I don't believe. And last but not least, I saw this teeny little cove that I hadn't been able to see before, and there were some people having a barbecue, having fun, with these stupid signs on the trees like Easy Does It and First Things First. And I yelled to one of them, and he came to the shore, and he not only heard me, but he called me by name. He said, dummy, drop the anvil. And I said, but I can't. It's been in the family for years. He said, I know just how you feel. I had a V8 engine I was swimming with back in that lake about 20 years ago. And I dropped the anvil. And they gave me directions how to kick my feet and move my hands and got me to shore and wrapped me in a blanket and showed me how to live life one day at a time, because I don't ever want to drink again. And I believe that if I keep doing what I'm doing, I won't ever have to swim back out there and pick up that anvil ever again. Thank you for asking me to come.